It's half past eight.
It's half past eight New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike presents Information Please. We set them up, you knock them down. I mean, we set up the experts, and you try to demolish them with your questions. For every question we use, Lucky Strike pays out $10, plus a copy of the new Information Please quiz book. If your question stumps us, you get $25 more, plus a 24-volume set of the current Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of duplication, Information Please uses the question that was received first. And all questions become the property of Information Please. And now light up a lucky strike as I introduce our master of ceremonies, the literary critic of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, Information Please is a completely unrehearsed and ad-lib program. And the four ad-libbers this evening include our three regulars, the pianist, composer, and author, Oscar Levant, the conductor of the Conning Tower in the New York Post, Franklin P. Adams, and the sports authority, John Kieran. Our guest this evening is the well-known American novelist, Walter D. Edmonds, author of Drums Along the Mohawk, and Chad Hanna, which can also be seen currently as a motion picture. Now remember, for each question that's missed, Lucky Strike rings up $25. And that's paid out to the sender, plus 24 volumes of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Well, we'll send out the first ball with a question from Mrs. F. Ast of Brooklyn, New York. Quote, two songs, or nursery rhymes, gentlemen, that enumerate the days of the week, which are Monday, Tuesday, and so forth. Mr. Adams?
Solomon Grundy.
Would you care to give us the history of Solomon Grundy?
Born on Monday.
Good. You haven't gotten very far, Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran, can you go on with Solomon?
Happened on Tuesday.
Yes, good. Thank you, Mr. Adams. Mr. Kieran?
Second on Wednesday.
Wait a minute. What happened on Wednesday?
Second on Wednesday.
That's a Freudian slip. Married.
Married. Oh, married on Wednesday.
What happened on Thursday?
Sick on Thursday, Saturday. Died on Friday, buried on
Sunday.
Saturday's an open day.
I skipped. I hurried him off, but that's the end of Solomon.
That is right. Well, that gives us one nursery rhyme. Now, how about another that enumerates the days of the week? Mr. Adams again.
Monday's Child.
Yes, that's very nice. Can you go on with that one?
Monday's Child is fair of face.
Yes.
Tuesday's Child is full of grace.
Very pretty. The next is Wednesday's Child, Mr. Adams.
Wednesday's Child, I don't know.
Do you know anybody know Wednesday's Child, Mr. Levant?
Second.
That sticks with you, does it? Now, Wednesday's Child is brave and glad. Thursday's Child is never bad.
I know Saturday's Child.
Give us Saturday's Child, Mr. Levant.
I know it has to work hard for its living, because my child was born on Saturday.
Work for
I looked it up.
Don't make a rule out of a single case. Saturday's Child is clear in mind.
No, you have the wrong edition.
You have the wrong child.
I don't know. I just got an optimistic one here. Now, nobody in my rhyme has to work for a living. The child that is born on the Sabbath day, gentlemen, of course, is fair and wise and good and gay, which is far too many things for one child to be, even if he were born on Sabbath day. Well, that gives us two out of two and sends us on to a question coming from F.J. Bob Boney of North Haven, Connecticut. Give the first names of the following men who are now involved in the well-known foreign situation. Get three out of four. The first name is Ciano. What's his first name? Mr. Levant.
I think it's Count Galicia. Galicia. What is it? Galicia? Gala?
Now, Galicia wouldn't be so good.
Galicia. Oh, well, help me.
Can anyone help
me? Galeazzo.
Now, you're all right. You're practically there. Galeazzo. Galeazzo. Very good. Did you pick up that Italian accent, Mr. Levant?
I did it after mispronouncing it.
Because I know how you can get rid of it at a very large distance. How about De Gaulle? De Gaulle. Mr. Levant.
Take a chance. Is it Charles?
You bet it is. And how well you pronounce
De Gaulle,
that,
De Gaulle, J. Wince.
Mm-hmm. Beg pardon, Sam?
Is that the one?
It's the
Gold Jade Wince. My withers.
Oh, gee, you reached for that. You reached for it. Charles de Gaulle.
My back is against the wall.
head of the Free France movement. Now, how about von Ribbentrop? He has a first name, too. When he was born, his mother gave him a first name. Mr. Adams?
Might be Herman.
No.
I wish it were. How about it, Mr.
Joachim.
Joachim. Yes. How'd you know that?
Because the name is so like that great violinist.
That's right.
Also, it's in the papers and in Time and in Pick and so forth every day, practically.
I know, but the only thing that Mr. Adams reads articles about
Pope
a man named
Herman.
That gives us one wrong. Now, how about the first name of Metaxas?
Well, that's easy.
Oh, do you know that one, Mr. Lamar?
George.
George. No.
The
no.
Premier of Greece?
Not as far as I know.
Greece,
yes.
George.
Is it George?
Sure.
Why do I think it's John? As far as I know, it's John. John Metaxas.
And get him wrong. It's King George.
Oh, yes. But you can't skip from premier to king that way and back again so lightly. Now, with John Metaxas, the premier of Greece, and that sends $25, courtesy of Lucky Strike, to Mr. Barboni. Plus the set of the Britannica. Now, Charles K. Spiegel of New York City sends in a question which is directed at Mr. Oscar Levesque. The studio pianist will play the beginnings of some famous variations on themes by other composers, three of them, as a matter of fact. And Mr. Levant is to play the original theme, name its composer, and the composer of each variation. Is that clear, Mr. Levant?
You're not clear, but I'll get it.
Well, that's the best I can do for you.
Of each variation.
Now, the studio pianist is going to play the beginning of a famous variation. Let's have the first variation. Mr. Levant, what is the variation? And
let me try one, will you?
All right. That seems to be right.
Something like that.
Who is it?
Beethoven, about 5 million variations on the theme of Diabelli.
Good for you. Yes, very good. People who know about these things tell me that's hard. Now the second variation.
I can go on, but I don't know what it is. I don't know what that is.
That's another question, asking you to go on. The original that you have just heard is Arensky, Variations on a Theme of Tchaikovsky.
I don't think that's for piano, though.
Not for yours, apparently.
Is it?
Yeah.
It's for orchestra.
How about the third? One wrong, then. Got that, Mr. Hunt?
I think it's Brahms Paganini.
You bet. Can you play it?
Not the variations. I can play the theme. It's been used by many.
Can you play the original theme?
Yeah, I think so.
Let's see. Nobly done, thank you. That gives Mr. Levant 2 out of 3. Now, gentlemen, here's a question from Simon Matt of Jersey City. Get 2 out of 3 on this one, if you can. What was the object of each of these rides? There are 3 of them. First is Lady Godiva's famous ride. What was the object of it, Mr. Edmonds?
To reduce the taxes.
Yes, to reduce the taxes. For what people?
People of Coventry.
The people of Coventry, yes. Of course, there were some byproducts connected with the ride, but generally it was an attempt to obtain relief from burdensome taxes. Do you know whether Lady Godiva succeeded in her effort, Mr. Edmonds?
I don't.
Do you know, Mr. Adams?
She did.
She did? Well, that is all right. Mr. Kieran, you...
Well, it states so in the final 2 lines of Tennyson's poem.
I bet you're the only one who ever got up to the end, Mr. Kieran. Lady Godiva's ride, therefore, was successful, but it should not necessarily be an object of imitation to any of our listeners, of course. What was the object of the ride of the Valkyrie? The ride of the Valkyrie. Mr. Levant.
Well, first, it provided Wagner with a wonderful number. There were 6 sisters, and when the heat was on, that's the way they got about, on these horses, which were invisible.
Yeah.
And they would sing Hoyo Toyo. I think that's public domain. I could sing it.
No, don't sing it, but tell me... But tell me what the object of the ride was. What did they do all this ho-yoing for?
That was their battle cry. They were Wotan's daughters, and when Brunhilde was in trouble, they were always around for a concerted number.
Now, I know. You know everything except the answer to this particular question. What was the... Edmund, what was the purpose of the ride?
To carry the souls of dead warriors to heaven?
Yes, to carry the souls of dead warriors to heaven. You knew that, of course, too, Mr.
I never cared about that.
We have one more ride. John Gilpin's famous ride. John Gilpin rode Mr. Kieran.
Why, he rode to what was to be the anniversary feast of his wedding.
Yeah.
And he carried the wine with him, and unfortunately it broke upon the road.
Yes, that's right. Celebrated his wedding anniversary. What wedding anniversary was it? Remember? Paper, gold, lead.
Silver,
cinnamon.
I think, wasn't it?
20th. I don't know what that is. 20th wedding anniversary. Well, that gives us three rides out of three rides and sends us on to Mrs. Renee Telemann's question. Mrs. Telemann comes from Ann Arbor, Michigan, and sends this one in. What famous women are associated with these islands? Here are four. The first is the island of Jersey. A famous lady associated with Jersey, Miss Adams.
Lily Langtry.
Lily Langtry, yes. The Jersey Lily. That's quite right. Now, the second island is Martinique. What lady do you associate with the island of Martinique, which has been in the papers a good deal lately, Miss Kieran?
That was Josephine.
Why do you associate her with that island?
She was born there, and they called her the Creole.
That's right. She was born on the island of Martinique. And Treasure Island. You associate any lady with Treasure Island, Mr. Kieran?
There was no lady in Treasure Island. The old the mother of the boy was the only one practically in the book who wore skirts.
You're not thinking of the same one I'm thinking of, Mr. Kieran.
Treasure
Island? San Francisco a little while ago.
Oh, I didn't know that one.
You know too much literature, not enough life. Mr. Levant?
That wasn't the cowgirls, was it? They weren't born there, but they frequented it at 50 cents admission.
That particular lady that's associated with Treasure Island, Miss Edmonds.
Well, speaking of fairs, wouldn't Elsie qualify for Jersey?
The cow?
Oh, oh,
you're still at Jersey.
I was just getting out of Jersey.
We've moved all the way out.
Sally Rand.
Sally Rand, yes. The well-known fan dancer.
Well, it all depends what year.
well-known fan dancer is associated with one of the displays at Treasure Island. Now, finally, Bedloe's Island. Bedloe's Island, Mr. Adams.
Bartholdi's Statue of Liberty.
Very good. Yes, the Statue of Liberty at the entrance to the harbor in New York City. There's a very famous lady. That gives us three out of four. How about
no money for Ann Arbor.
Herman Spivak of Washington, D.C. sends this one in. Has the Tennessee football team lost any games this year? Answer yes or no, and
yes, I will answer.
All right.
They lost the game last January 1st, University of Southern California.
Oh, how smart you are, Mr. LeVant. My golly, that's quite right. That's a long way, almost a year ago, January 1st, 1940. What was the score, by the way?
It was two touchdowns or something. Am I right?
Yes, remember it?
14-0.
14-0, that's right. Now, so far, Lucky Strike has paid out $25 and one set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Now, here's a question submitted by none other than Mr. Milton Cross. Who, back in 1928, made famous the saying, "Let's look at the record"? By a strange coincidence, I see that Mr. Cross has his hand up to answer his own question.
The answer, when it comes to politics, is Al Smith. But when it comes to smoking, it's Lucky Strike that wants everyone to look at the record. For the record shows that Lucky Strike consistently pays higher prices to get finer, lighter, milder tobaccos. For instance, here are the season totals from that important bright tobacco market, Goldsboro, North Carolina. At that auction market, the American Tobacco Company paid 49% more per pound for the tobacco it bought for its cigarettes and other tobacco products. Yes, 49% above the average market price paid for all the various types and grades of tobacco sold there. And the best we bought will go to Lucky's. Well, you get what you pay for. And Lucky Strike wants and pays for and gets the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder leaf. So remember the record next time you buy cigarettes. Ask for Lucky Strike.
Mr. Cross did himself out of an Encyclopedia Britannica by answering his own question perfectly in just 54 seconds. Now, I'm going to ask you to answer this one if you can. This comes from C.J. Coburn of this city. Give four phrases mentioning clothes or wearing apparel which describe a person's social or economic status or personality. For example, high hat might be one. I bet you're going to give me that one, Mr. Adams. I'm sorry to have taken that out of your mouth. Mr. Adams?
Stuffed shirt.
Stuffed shirt. Very good one. Yes, that's one. Mr. Kieran?
Oh, he's a hard boot.
I beg your pardon?
Hard boot.
What does that mean?
Well, it comes from down in bluegrass region, Kentucky.
It means tough guy?
No, that's a native down there. It's a hard boot.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that. That's two. How about it, Mr. LeVant?
Either down at the heels or heel. Either one.
Take your choice. Mr. Edmonds?
Would boiled qualify for a boiled shirt?
Yes, it might. It might. How about panty waist or she wears the pants would be another one. Mr. LeVant?
He's got a sock in either hand. What about that?
I suppose it wouldn't describe his social or economic status much. What am I to do?
Don't you wear socks?
Blue stocking is another. Or to, out at elbows would still be another, perhaps. Or you could go on and name a great many more.
Wear no man's collar.
All right, that's a very good one, Mr. Adams. Now, how about this one from Vera Cheruti of New York City? This is an interesting historical question. Name the 13 original states. I'm going to allow you four errors. Maybe that's one apiece. Mr. Kieran?
New Hampshire.
Your answer is one.
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts is another.
Rhode Island.
Rhode Island is another.
Connecticut.
Just a minute now. Rhode Island and Connecticut. That gives us four. Now, suppose the rest of the story is taken up by someone else. Mr. Edmonds?
Well, New York.
New York, yes.
New Jersey.
New Jersey, yes.
Pennsylvania.
Pennsylvania, yes. Now, how about it, Mr. Adams? Can you name any others?
Virginia.
Virginia, yes. Getting on.
Georgia.
Georgia is right, Mr. Adams. Now, there are a few we haven't named. Mr. Lamont.
Mr. Edmonds said Maryland, which you didn't hear. I want you
to... I'm awfully sorry. I missed that. Maryland is quite correct.
Has anyone said Pennsylvania?
Yes, someone has said Pennsylvania. Mr. Kieran.
How many have you got?
I've got 11.
You have 11?
Mm-hmm. How about the Carolina?
North Carolina.
That's right.
And Vermont.
North Carolina and South Carolina.
Not Vermont.
Vermont was not one of the original states.
I said the Carolinas.
You're right, Mr. Levant. The Carolinas.
For the first time in my life, somebody intruded on me.
It'll probably never happen again. Well, that gives us only one error. I allowed you four. That does not send $25 or an encyclopedia to Miss Cheruti, but does send us on to the next question. This comes from D. Gagliardi of New Haven, Connecticut. Get two out of three. Who were the characters of literature or the movies who rose in the first case from hobo to governor? A character in literature or the movies, Mr. Levant?
The Great McGinney.
The Great McGinney rose from hobo to governor. Now, how about one who rose from convict to mayor? Mr. Edmonds.
The mayor of Casterbridge.
Was he a convict?
I guess
to begin with? Now, I'm not certain of that.
He was a tramp, anyway.
Well, that wouldn't necessarily make him a convict. Mr. Kieran.
Jean Valjean.
In what book?
Les Misérables.
Yes, there, an undoubted convict who rose to be an undoubted mayor. That's quite right.
Mayor.
Now, how about one who rose from housebreaker to member of parliament?
What's a housebreaker?
You don't know what a housebreaker is? A burglar.
Oh.
Housebreaker to member of parliament.
Sounds like one of those David Niven parts.
I don't know who played it, but it's from a play called What Every Woman Knows.
Oh, well, then I know.
Do you know it, Mr. Lamont?
Well, if it's What Every Woman Knows, his name was John Shan.
Yes, John Shan. I'm afraid I can't give you full credit on that,
actually,
though, Mr. Levant. And that will send $25 instead of the Britannica to Mr. Gagliardi. John Shan and Barry's play What Every Woman Knows rose from housebreaker to MP. Now, how about this one from H.H. Tenney of River Forest, Illinois? Get three out of four. First, name a Frenchman who ruled Sweden, who at one time ruled Sweden. Mr. Kieran.
Oh, it's one of Napoleon's marshals.
You're quite right. And his name?
It slips my mind. I'm sorry.
Ney.
Beg pardon?
Ney, any what?
No, the answer is Ney. It was not Ney. The answer is Bernadotte. Bernadotte. Jean-Baptiste Jules Bernadotte. I'm afraid I have to insist on you getting the entire name, Mr. Kieran. I knew you had it on the tip of your tongue. How about an Austrian who ruled Mexico?
That I know.
Do you know that, Mr. Levant?
Maximilian.
Maximilian, yes. Now, how about a German who ruled Russia? A German who ruled Russia.
That's a fine point there.
Well, I think there's only one. Mr. Edmonds.
Would it possibly be Catherine?
Yes, indeed. Catherine II, the daughter of the prince of a little German duchy called Anhalt-Zerbst, which you can forget, Mr. Edmonds, if you wish, if you're all right. What was her original name?
No idea.
She was called Sophia Auguste, or Augusta, I guess, before she became Catherine. Now, how about an Italian by descent who ruled France? An Italian by descent who ruled France, Mr. Edmonds.
Napoleon.
Napoleon, yes. Napoleon, of course, was born where?
In Corsica.
In Corsica, was an Italian by descent. That gives us three out of four. How about this one from I. Greenberg of Springfield Gardens, New York? This is a movie question. Get two out of three. In each of three popular movies, a trip was a very important part of the story. Name the picture. Now, in the first case, the wife goes on a trip, the ship is wrecked, and she's away from home for about 7 years. Mr. Levant.
Yes, Irene Dunne.
Yes, Irene Dunne. And what's the name of the picture?
That's one of those Cary Grants.
Something about a wife.
Favorite wife.
My favorite wife. That was a kind of composite answer. Mr. Edmonds, Mr. Adams, and Mr. Levant.
Well, there are a lot of those pictures that are similar. They all leave each other and come back in a different picture sometimes.
That's right. That gives us one right. Now, here's another trip. In this case, it's a middle-aged bachelor who takes a trip and comes home determined to get married.
Oh.
It usually works the other way around. Mr. Levant?
It's Charles Lawton, and they knew what they wanted.
That's right. Charles Lawton, and knew what they wanted. And the lady in question who...
Carol Lombard.
Carol Lombard, yes.
Don't you ever stay home?
As a matter of fact, if you went away from home more often, Mr. Adams, you could answer some of these motion picture questions.
So I put on.
In this case, the husband goes away on a trip and comes back a changed man. Goes away on a trip and comes back a changed man.
Changed man.
Yep. Different personality. Does that make it clearer? Looks like we were going to miss out on this one. Well, it's I Love You Again with William Powell and Myrna Loy. I remember only Myrna Loy in it.
I saw it, but it was William Powell to me all the time.
It was Myrna Loy to me all the time. I'll fight that. Well, that gives us two out of three. Here's one for Miss Lavinia Porter of Pokegama, Minnesota. And if I'm mispronouncing the name of Pokegama, I beg the pardon of every native Pokegaman in the town of Pokegama, Minnesota. Quote the question with which each of these poems ends. They all end with a question. What is it? Get two out of three. The first poem is Keats's famous Ode to a Nightingale. It ends with what question, Mr. Turin?
Was it a vision or a waking dream? Fled is that music. Was it a vision or a something dream? Fled is that music. Do I wake or sleep?
That's perfect. That's quite right, Mr. Turin. I'm not easy to remember, I don't think. It isn't so hard, generally, to remember the first lines of these famous poems, but to remember the last lines is quite a trick.
It's hard to even read the last line.
Well, Mr. Turin goes right to the last line. Now, how about François Villon's famous poem, The Ballad of Dead Ladies? That ends with what question? Any of you remember that, Mr. Adams?
Where are the snows of yesteryear?
Where are the snows of yesteryear? Mr. Turin.
Don't you want it in French?
Yes, I do. I'd love it in French. We get this extra free for nothing.
Mais où sont les neiges d'antan?
That's right. That's right. Very good. Mais où sont les neiges d'antan? Where are the snows of yesteryear? Which, by the way, is one of the few perfect translations of a difficult line that I know of. You know who translated it, Mr. Karen?
Justin Huntley McCarthy and John Payne.
Is that the McCarthy?
Both of them.
Yes. Wasn't Rossetti, was it?
He did, too.
Rossetti did, too.
Well, who was responsible for this particular line, but where are the snows of yesteryear?
I bet you Rossetti.
No. I think it was Rossetti. I may be wrong.
No.
Now, Pope, the 18th century poet, Alexander Pope, wrote a famous poem called The Dying Christian to His Soul. It ended with what question or questions? Oh, when I tell you, you're going to be greatly surprised. You all know it, really, Mr. Levant?
I'll only guess after Mr. Karen and the rest of the guests give up.
You rest of the guests give up?
I'll give up.
Well, I'll give up. In his ear.
No.
Well, I don't want to be embarrassed. It isn't Wither.
You don't.
It doesn't start with Wither, is it, does it?
No,
it
doesn't.
Well, I wouldn't go any farther.
Mr. Edmund? The answer is, O grave, where is thy victory? O death, where is thy sting? Mr.
Well, that's a quotation. That's from the Bible.
Yes. In altered form, I think. But all I said was that the poem, even if Pope quotes it, does end with those questions.
All right, I give up too then.
See, you fellows are getting kind of morose. That gives us two out of three, which is good enough. Now, how about this one from Eugene P. Meltzer of Brooklyn, New York? Name three characters of legend or literature who were able to hold conversations with birds or animals. Birds, of course, are animals. Mr. Edmonds.
St. Francis?
St. Francis of Assisi, yes. He spoke to the birds. Is it ever indicated that the birds understood what he was saying, Mr. Edmonds?
Not that I've ever heard of.
I don't know, but the literature of St. Francis, those little lectures to the birds, are very beautiful. That gives us one. Mr. Turin.
Rima, the Bird Girl in Green Mansions by W.H. Hudson.
Very good. Yes, that's another one. Mr. Adams, did you have another?
I think Pegasus spoke to his horse Bellerophon.
But what? Was Pegasus a horse?
No, Pegasus spoke to the horse.
Oh, Pegasus was the man. Bellerophon was the horse?
I think so.
Is that right, Mr. Turin?
No, I don't
Pegasus
think
was
so.
The horse.
Right. Pegasus the horse?
Yes. You think one horse talked to another? No.
Who was on the horse?
Who was on that horse, Mr. Cure?
Walt Disney.
Mr. Levant, you have another one for us?
Yeah, I think Siegfried, in the second act of Siegfried.
Yes, whom does he talk to?
A bird sings to him, leads him to Brunhilde in the third act, and you remain there for the rest of the day.
Yeah, that's right. And there are a number of others, perhaps, that may come to mind. Mowgli in Kipling's The Jungle Book, Mittle and Tyltyl in The Blue Bird. Carolyn C. Crippen of Chicago sends this one in. Now, you know the generals are popularly believed to die in bed. Can you name three famous generals who died or were mortally wounded on the field of battle in America? Mr. Adams, want to start us off?
Thomas J. Jackson. Stonewall Jackson.
Stonewall Jackson, yes. Is it is there a tradition that he was wounded by accident by one of his own men and died as a result of the wound?
That's a tradition. I don't know whether that's
true or not. Mr. Edmonds?
Well, Herkimer.
I beg pardon?
Herkimer.
General Herkimer, where was he wounded?
Near Rome, New York.
Near Rome. Is it the Battle of the Oriskany?
Oriskany, yes.
That gives us two. Nicholas Herkimer. And how about Mr. Kieran?
Why, General Braddock of the British forces and also General Wolfe of the British forces.
Yes, and when you think of Wolfe, you think of another general who died at the same time.
Montcalm.
Yes, at the Plains of Abraham.
And Gray's Elegy.
That's quite right. How about another one, Mr. LeVant?
General Custer.
General Custer, yes. General Custer died at the famous Custer's last charge.
Where?
The
Little Bighorn. Got the Battle of the Little Bighorn.
He was making it up.
Well, that gives us at least five. And now Mr. Cross is going to tell us about one of the most interesting things he saw at Southern Tobacco Auctions.
As the auction progresses along the row of tobacco, warehouse employees fill out a ticket for each basket sold. They write down the buyer and the price and leave the ticket on top of the basket. For instance, I remember seeing tickets marked A, meaning sold American, and 31, meaning $31 per 100 pounds. And right next to them were baskets which were not marked A, and which bore the price figure 17 or 18. I asked tobacco buyers to explain the difference, and here in effect is what they said. Mr. Cross, you want a mild smoke, don't you? Most folks do. Everybody in tobacco knows that, of course. So at the auctions, when some fine, light, really mild tobacco comes along, we're all in there bidding, and the price goes up and up. Now Lucky Strike pays those higher prices at auction after auction. That's why you can be sure of the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos in Lucky's.
Thank you, Mr. Cross. Lucky Strike's losses for this week are $50 and two sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Mr. Edmonds, Lucky Strike, thank you for coming down tonight and helping us out. Next week, that dependable duo, Kieran and Adams, will be on hand, and our two guests will be first an old-timer we always welcome back, Mr. Deems Fantasia Taylor, and second, that renowned journalist and author of Personal History and Not Peace But a Sword, Mr. Vincent Sheehan. Now remember, for every question we use, whether or not it's answered correctly, the sender gets $10. And if the question stumps our experts, you not only get $25 more, but in addition, the complete 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember, send letters with questions and correct answers to Information, Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. Now a parting message from Mr. L.A. Speed Riggs, famous tobacco auctioneer of Goldsboro, North Carolina.
And that chant, fully interpreted, ladies and gentlemen, means Luckies pay higher prices for the finer, the lighter, the naturally milder tobaccos. With independent tobacco experts, auctioneers, buyers, warehouse men, with men who know tobacco best, it's Luckies 2-1.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.